You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Earth Station 1. That's right, folks. We are going to have our numbers finally come up, or has it? Is it time for the machine's number to finally be called? And man, did the show go out with a bang. We are, of course, talking about Person of Interest. We talked about it a couple years ago, but we thought, you know, the show had its final season, and we finally have a full wrap-up with the show. We're going to be talking all about season 5, and so it'll be interesting what everybody thinks about. We got a great crew, but of course, let me say hi to Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, sir?
I am cautious because, you know, we're talking about a very subversive show this week. And yeah, so just have to figure out which one of us is going to be a victim and which one is going to be a perpetrator. Because we definitely have some victims and perpetrators in the geek seat this week.
Oh, very much so. Very, very much so. So it's going to be interesting to see, because we have some very suspicious people and their numbers came up. So they got called and put into it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But for those people who, you know, haven't seen the finale yet, they haven't seen the last season, if they want to catch up and listen to our previous show that we did on Person of Interest, that was episode 182. So they should be able to go to our site and punch that up, and 182, and that's about the halfway point, I think, when we were talking about it. So
It was definitely, I think it was like almost 3 seasons ago.
Yeah, it was a while back. That's a cool episode. We had Molly McIsaac in the geek seat. That was right before she did that cosplay show, I think, or something. So yeah, Fangasm, I think.
Yes.
Something like that. Yeah.
Aren't they all Fangasms in some way, though?
Plus, we talked about the very first episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So.
Wow. Wow. Okay, we are definitely dating ourselves now, then.
So that was a while ago, but yeah, that was in 2013. So, it was a great show that, you know, meant a lot to us. So, yes, we wanted to give it a proper send-off, so. I hope everybody enjoys that.
Oh, I hope so too. And, you know, definitely take a listen, because it was a fun episode. And now we're going to take it from the other end. We are taking it from the end. So yep. It should be interesting. And hold on. A number just popped up. We're going to have Bobby Nash's number just came up.
Oh, boy. He's definitely a perpetrator.
Oh, he is. Hold on. There's another one too. The machine is saying Drew Leiter is going to be here also.
He's kind of more victimish, I think.
Yeah, he has that victim type of voice. So he's like, hi, help me. What are you doing? Why are you putting this hood over me? I mean, yeah. But, well, we can't tell him where the station is, so it's okay.
Drew knows. He's got part of the station now.
Well,
sorry. did I say that out loud?
Spoilers.
I know, right?
We'll be talking
Let's
about that.
Let's just say Drew has a little bit of an announcement to make later on.
So, yeah, we have a lot of ins and outs and secrets and such this week. And actually, this is kind of a special episode for us. This is our first recording of an international style, because I'm coming to you from the Great White North.
We are in different countries.
We are, for the first time ever. We're talking to each other. Trans world, almost.
Almost.
Transnational.
Trans America, sir.
Exactly.
We're still both in North America. We haven't, like, you know, not on different continents yet.
Not yet. That'll be a future episode.
Exactly. So yeah. we're getting further and further apart, you and I.
Oh, we've been growing apart for years. I've been meaning to talk to you about that.
Absolutely. So, but yes, no, you are in the Great White North. How's Toronto, sir?
Toronto is amazing. First stop I made, of course, as soon as I got off the airplane, was of course seeing Tim Hortons.
Of course.
Of course. You know, coffee and donuts cannot match it, you know? And I almost had poutine today for the first time, but I kind of wimped out because it's a lot of gravy and chicken fat. And it's like, maybe not. But Toronto is such a great city. There is so much to do. I'm up here for a conference with my other job, and it's been interesting so far. And I hear I'm getting away from all the heat and humidity from the thunderstorms and such in Atlanta.
Absolutely, you are.
So. But it's real cool, and I'm glad to be able to still do the podcast.
Yes, the power of technology.
It's pretty darn amazing. So with that being said, we want to hear from you. Has your number come up? We want to hear from you. Write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com store, where we'll have person of interest series 3, 4, and 5. Why not? We'll throw it up there. You know, it'll be a lot of fun. And also, you know, we might even have Big in Japan season. Was it book 2?
Book 2.
Because we're going to be all talking all about that. So it should be interesting to see. So should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with this week's rants and raves. And Mike, you have some really sad news, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I always hate to start off this way, and we did lose a good friend of the station, actually. Michael Hudson, who is a writer, artist, publisher, passed away this weekend. He's sudden illness, and it was very sudden. We're all very surprised. We've had Michael on the show a few times promoting various work. He was a publisher at Raven's Head Press and Sequential Pulp Comics. Bobby's going to be on a little later. But Bobby works very closely with him because he was involved with 2 or 3 projects that Bobby recently has published. And, you know, he was a great guy. He was an independent sort. So I felt a certain kinship with him as a publisher because I know how tough that can be. But I was really happy for him because it seemed like the last few months, certainly last few years, actually, he'd been reaching like higher and higher success. Certainly the project that he worked on with Bobby and that got published by Dark Horse was a pretty big success. And, you know, I've heard that he's been great. He's great to meet in person at conventions and whatnot. So I'm sorry I never got that chance. So to all of his friends, associates, certainly his family, we definitely send our condolences. You know, it's a sad day.
Totally understand that. We're so sorry to hear about that. God, what is it with 2016?
2016, man, it hits some people close to home. You know, it's it's just not stopping. I mean, it's halfway over, and God knows what the second half is in store for us. So
trust me, I know. It almost frightens me in a lot of ways.
But you know what? With this happening, you know, I got scared for Joe Perry because there was reports that he was hospitalized last night, and I'm like, oh, please, not, you know, Joe. So, but it sounds like he's stable and doing okay. But you know, with this happening, with, you know, not to get into it, but with other stuff happening in the world, just, you know, reach out and, you know, make sure that the people that you care about know that you care about them, that you love them. Don't be afraid to make this day act like it's your last, because you never know.
Nope, exactly. Every day should be another day where you go and look at your friends and loved ones and say, you know, thanks for being around.
Absolutely. I certainly appreciate, you know, I'm coming up on my 6th anniversary here on the station, and I certainly couldn't imagine my life now without podcasting, certainly since I do it seem like every other day of the week. But it's been great. And obviously the listeners out there, I can't say enough good things about those people who choose to spend their time and listen to our nonsense. We've got a chance to meet a few, and that's been a true blessing. And I look forward to meeting. I wish I could meet everybody, but hopefully someday that will be possible.
I hope so too. Definitely. And, you know, I just don't even know what to say when it comes to losing loved ones. I've had enough loss in my life, and it still oogs me out, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
And it's just, it's horrible. And especially when someone's taken from you so suddenly. I understand, you know, when I lost my mom, she, you know, went through a really bad battle with cancer. So it wasn't a quick goodbye. And my dad was a quick goodbye, but that's a whole nother story for another night. And it's just when you don't have that time to, you know, say what you need to say, it's just like you feel empty and you feel lost even harder a lot of times.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, people ask, is it better or worse? And it's not better or worse. Both are bad. You just, it's just different. It's just a different kind of bad, you know? So, but yeah, certainly. Yeah, hopefully we won't, hopefully, you know, 2016 will take it easy on the rest of us for the rest of the year. But of course we know that, life and death happen. So, it really is, kind of sucks, especially when it seems like it all happens at once. Like it has been this year, but anyway, I did want to mention, and it's kind of on the same note because, recently I purchased a new graphic novel from DC Comics, Vertigo, actually.
Really?
And it's written by, it's an original graphic novel written by Paul Dini with art by Eduardo Risso. People might know that name from his stint on 100 Bullets, and he's done other things as well. He worked on Batman for a little while. And of course, Paul Dini, everybody pretty much knows his name from being part of the animated series, but he's recently, come out with this graphic novel, and it's called Dark Knight, N-I-G-H-T, and it's called A Real Batman Story. And basically, he tells this very personal account of an incident that happened while he was working on Batman the Animated Series, in which case he was mugged and beaten within an inch of his life. And it's really happened to him, and he goes through and talks in a very personal and honest way about the events that led up to it, the events that followed, and him trying to get his life back together. It's a very personal and very touching, moving account that I was captivated by. And I definitely encourage people to check out. It's one of probably the best graphic novels I've read in decades. I mean, Paul's such a good storyteller, and yes, there's some really intense, heartbreaking, violent stuff in this. That's why it's a Vertigo book. But it's also entertaining because Paul's a fun storyteller. Anybody who's seen his work on, you know, on cartoons and comics can know that Paul's can make you laugh. The art by Rizzo. Usually I'm used to seeing his stuff in more horrifying, violent ways. And certainly that's part of this book as well. But there's some really tender moments, too, that I didn't expect from his work. So I think this is this is one of those books that's really special. It's really personal. Even though that I've never personally, I fortunately never have been beaten within an inch of my life or had subject to that violent of attack. I still could identify with him on some level because he talks about things like depression and motivation and things of that nature that I think everybody can relate to. So I definitely encourage everybody to check this book out. I know that it's the cover price is like $24. It's a hardcover, so it's one of those things. It's like, ooh, that's a lot of money to spend on a comic, Mike. I know, but I think this is one of those books that you're going to remember and it's really going to impact you, I think, if you're like me. And if you go through the Amazon e-store, it is a little cheaper. I must admit, I got it through Amazon and it was, I think, about half price. So that lessens the bite a little bit. But I definitely encourage people to check it out. Again, it's called Dark Knight. That's N-I-G-H-T. A True Batman Story by Paul Dini and Eduardo Risso.
I actually had heard Paul talk about in an interview about what had happened to him and how he wanted to put it out in a story. He didn't want it to continue eating him up inside.
Yes, he's told this tale before, this story of what happened to him before, but I don't think it's ever been in such a way that sort of talks about everything that he was going through, and again how it's just, like I said, marvelously depicted in terms of the artwork. So I know he's talked about it before in interviews and everything, but it's kind of cool to have this like written down account of it, you know?
Oh, sure. It is. And it's dramas in that sometimes make some of the best stories in the world. So that's awesome. And I'm glad you enjoyed it. I can't wait to read it. So it should be a lot of fun.
It's very good. It's very good. It's my pick for best book of the year and already, and probably even further out than that. Like I said, it's been one of the best reads I don't mean it as a like, ooh, it's a fun read, because you know, you have to sit down and get ready for it. But once you do, it takes you on a road that it's, you know, you won't forget.
Oh, totally not. I could see that a lot. So my real quick is, I've got a confession to make to everybody. I've been reading the comic book Saga for a little bit now, but I've decided to go back and read it from the beginning all over again. And my God, it is still so good. It's one of my favorite comics. And if I just wanted to go out and rave about it, for me, a rave. Can you believe that, folks? it's a fun comic. There's some cliches in it, but it takes it a whole different direction, and it's just a lot of fun. And I'm really, you know, wanted to pump it up that, you know, it's a great thing to read. And what's an Image book, isn't it? I think.
What, Saga?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I just think if you know, the trades are readily available. I think they're up to the sixth one already. Because I picked up the first trade, and then after that, I've been collecting the comics monthly. And so I've been going back and rereading it, and I'm just enjoying it. And it's like, I just want to tell everybody, read it. It's a great book. Don't ignore it. Yes, it's not a superhero comic, but you know what? It's a great sci-fi story. And, you know, it has some cliches, but it's fun as heck, folks. Definitely please do check it out.
Absolutely. It's, you know what, the fact that it's, you know, in the 20s now, and it's been out for a couple years, hasn't lost anything. It's still one of the first things that I read when it comes out. And it never disappoints. It's always engaging, interesting, intense, everything that you want. The whole reason you read comics, it's still there. And it is still a top read.
Mm-hmm. And it's not predictable. Which is nice. It's like you don't know where it's going to go. So,
no.
And so it's like every time you think you got to figure it out, I know where the story's going. Not at all. So definitely, and I'll probably put the first two trades up in the ESO store. If you need to read it, it's not that expensive. I think it's like $9, $10 through Amazon right now. So definitely take a peek at it. We want to hear from you. What are you guys reading? What are you know, watching? Write us, esopodcast@gmail.com. All right, we got numbers coming up. So we got victims for the Geek Seat. Can we save them from the evil of Samaritan? We'll have to find out.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast delivers the latest sci-fi news, plus movie and TV reviews with brilliant and insightful commentary. If you haven't listened to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast before, you will. Listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast now.
What, you think you're some kind of Jedi waving your hand around like that?
Watto, I'm telling everyone to listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will, including you.
No, they won't. I'm a Toydarian. My tricks gonna work on me. Only money.
Okay, I don't have money, but please listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Sci-fi. From a certain point of view.
Welcome back. And now we have with us a return of a couple of good friends on the station. Timothy Price is joining us again. Timothy.
Hey guys, what's going on?
And with him is Robert Scott Field.
Hey guys.
And with them is also Alan O.W. Barnes.
Hello.
Welcome, gentlemen. And Tim, congratulations on the debut of Big in Japan 2.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. It's been great. It's been a lot of fun. We've been doing a lot of book signings over the last couple days. We've been doing a lot of recording. And so far, the feedback's been really great. We're That's so awesome. Happy you're having us on. Really appreciate it, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we're good friends, but also, I mean, I'm a fan, man. The first book was awesome, and I can't wait to get my hands on the second one.
Oh, thank you so much. So, got bunches of them just waiting for people to get their hands on them.
So tell us about the process, because we know you've been writing it and Alan's provided the illustrations. Yep. So tell us a little bit about how the second one went for you. Was it everything that you hoped it could be?
You know, actually, I really, you know, trying to focus more on the my writing style and trying to improve as a writer, as always, is like, you know, all of us geeks want to get better at the art that we create. So we always want to, you know, be improving in that matter, but also retaining the same feel of the first story, which seems to be what everybody really loves so much. It was a long process doing this because I started writing it when my dad passed away, when the first one had come out a few months later. So it was hard for me to do, you know, keep writing. And I took a year off from Big in Japan. And it was funny because I'd be writing and the whole story of my dad and my relationship with my dad was coming out in my writing. And when you read the second book, you're going to see a lot of it. And it's really, it became a real integral part of the story. And it's so funny because the last book, the protagonist was Tommy Lynn Taylor. And in the story, the band, it's Tommy Lynn Taylor, who's the lead guitarist, and it's also Nathan Fox, who's the lead singer. And the first book was told from Tommy's point of view, and the second book is told from Nathan's point of view. And this one starts off with old Nathan in rehab and goes from there. So it stayed true to the story because, you know, I felt it was really important to grow his character as well. And that was actually a suggestion Alan made too, and I want to give him kudos to that. Was I like the idea of taking all of the characters now and kind of doing a different perspective on their take of their whole adventure fighting kaiju and being in a rock band and being agents and different backgrounds from everybody. And I don't want to give anything away in the first book, but it was really where it needed to go. And it was really neat how my relationship with my dad wound up being Nathan's relationship with his dad while surrounded by a bunch of battling Daikaiju. So, but I'm so dang proud of this one. I really am. It's I've had some really good feedback on it. And, you know, it's always that waiting period when you first come out with stuff because you want people to like your stuff. And, you know, as an artist, you hate to say that, but, you know, you want people to read it and say, oh, I really liked it. You don't want them to say they hated it. But I think I really captured something special in this one. So I'm really excited about it.
No, good for you. I mean, and obviously very proud. I mean, And as you've experienced now, I mean, your first book is, you know, something that you kind of have to do. The second one, though, it's almost more difficult to come up and get to get that done because you almost feel like you've done that.
Well, you know, the funny thing is and this is what I tell people, you know, I've written all my life, but of course I'm a musician by trade. That's what I do. And I toured for years and years in various rock bands and show bands and lived in Las Vegas. And hence the whole rock band fighting Daikaiju thing, because I'm writing about things I know. And a lot of the stories in both books are from my adventures out on the road. And a lot of them are adult adventures, but there they are in the books. And the first book, and it's like I used to always tell Alan, and I told Scott the same thing, you know, it's I didn't consider myself knowing enough about writing to know if I was doing anything wrong. And it was harder to write this one because it's like, oh, that's not right. Oh, this, I need to do this. Right. Oh, I'm ending a sentence with a preposition. Oh, it's not a complete sentence. Damn it. So it was a lot harder. I mean, it really was. But, you know, hopefully a lot of good things have come from my writing. I've been, I'm writing articles for Mad Scientist magazine now. My second article is coming out with them in just a few weeks. And our good buddy Mark Maddox did the great Rodan cover on the last one that my article was in. And then he also did the Zygons, which is coming up on the latest cover. So I'm kind of really happy that my articles are in both Mad Scientist's where Mark did the cover. Yay, Mark. Yeah. And but another big thing about this one, too, that I really, you know, one thing about the first one that I'm really grateful about is my friend Scott Field, Robert Scott Field. And as a lot of you know, he was in Godzilla versus King Ghidorah. He was in Ultraman Neos. And it's that first book built our friendship. And, you know, he's sitting right here, and I'm here to tell you he's one of my best friends in the world because of Big in Japan and because of the music we love and share together. We've been working nonstop on his next CD down in my studio for the last couple of days. And I'm so appreciative to him for all the stuff he does for me and, you know, and all the fun we have. And him being part of the book has been just wonderful. And, you know, he likes the story. He really enjoys the whole concept. And he was much more a part of the second book as Alan was. And it's becoming, you know, this is my idea, my creation. And I write the books. But I'm telling you, this is becoming more of a three-way team between Robert Scott, Scott, as we like to call him and as he likes to be called, and of course, Alan. But another thing that Scott did for me that was really great that a lot of you Kaiju fans will really appreciate, one, of course, him being one of the characters in the book. And it's not a character based off of any characters he's played in any movies or any shows. It's a character I created. So we were able to use his likeness, and his name is an acronym you may remember from the first book. But also what he did was he made it possible for me to get in touch with Akira Takarada. And Akira Takarada, you may know, is probably one of the biggest icons in Godzilla movies. He was in the very first movie, Gojira. He was in Godzilla versus the Thing. He was in the last one, Final Wars, of course, before Shin Gojira, which is coming out within the next few weeks. But, you know, I need to thank Scott for letting that happen because I sent him, you know, he got me in touch with his English liaison and his English offices, and we had to go through a bunch of, you know, kind of back and forth because Takarada-san doesn't speak that much English. He speaks a little bit. And so we went through another gentleman, and I know he talked to Scott about it. And Scott's like, yeah, this is good. I really enjoy this. Tim's writing these books, blah, blah, blah. And it was funny because I had to send Takarada-san actual paragraphs from the book and a few of the drawings that Alan has drawn. And it was funny. A really good story is that when I received the letter I received an email saying that I absolutely could use his likeness. I was with Ricky and Bambi from Radio Cult, and we were all sitting around together when the email came in. It was really special. And so when it came in, he said, yep, as long as there's no, and nothing too close to any characters that he's played, no royalty or no copyright infringements because of characters. He said, absolutely. And then I'll just tack this on. What they said in the email was that the reason that his translator, his liaison, who was speaking with me, said that he thought that Takarada-san agreed to do it was because the character in the book, his name is Kiyoshi Takarada, and that was Akira Takarada's father's name, and that was 100% a coincidence. So it was kind of neat. So there's a lot of great people getting behind this little Big in Japan idea, and it's guys like Robert Scott, and it's guys like Alan O.W. Barnes, who've believed in me since the beginning of this. And there's other guys out there too, like Jeff Horn, an animator friend of mine named Mark Butler, And there's countless other people. John Waterhouse, you guys all know John. And so many great folks, too. And you guys, too, because you were there when the first book came out. And there's so many people kind of coming together that want to see this happen that it's overwhelming, to be honest with you. And I'm very fortunate to have so many great people in my corner on this.
You're going to like look at this is Scott, but you're going to like looking at the next book, too, because seeing the first book through the process that he went through in the second one and Alan's illustrations, man, he's improved. Really.
He's knocked it out of the park.
The first one was really good, but the second one, it's like night and day. There's really amazing illustrations in this next one. And I was blown away. And I haven't read the second book yet either, but I'm just blown away by the illustrations. It's amazing.
I'm looking at both covers right now, and it is. I mean, you can just see in 3 years. And Alan's always been great. Then he got really good, and now it's like you're looking at this, and I'm like, I can't believe this is the cover of my book.
It's really well done. And, you're going to like this, guys.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. So there you go, Barnes.
How do you and Alan work? I mean, do you guys do the illustrations while you're writing the book, or do you wait until afterwards and decide?
No, I tell you what, I've been talking a lot. I'm going to let Alan answer some of those questions so you don't have to listen to me yak anymore.
So Tim basically sends me we modified the way that we worked together this time a little bit. The way that Tim originally did it was he would sort of send me a breakdown of what he thought would make a good illustration. But then I would often write him back and say, hey man, can I get like a section from the book that comprises this? Cause I would really like to understand the action that's going on and how these people are emoting and what their relationships are for the particular moment and all that. Because, you know, I'm more of a cartoonist than a straight illustrator. And I wanted to have some interaction, some story beats that you could see in the pictures. And so that's really what I was going for with it. And, every once in a while, Tim would come back and say, oh, I forgot to tell you X. And a couple of those times, I actually talked Tim into changing what he wrote in the book to match the illustration.
There's something in there that's really cool. You guys, now, of course, we're all geeks. I have a huge kaiju collection, and I collect toys from when I was growing up. I'm a 70s monster kid. And I don't know if you remember these, but in the 70s, there were these models called Gigantics. And where you'd buy a model of this insect, and what I think what happened was they're making like some natural models, you know, like insect models for kids to play with. And somebody said, no, this is really lame. So what they did was they made these smashed cities behind them. So it's like a tarantula. It looks just like a normal tarantula, except for all of the destruction that's surrounding it on the diorama. So, you know, we put some nods in there like that. I'm telling Alan about all these, you know, this. Oh, it was the greatest model I ever had when I was a kid. So we put a little nod to them in there, and we would have to kind of go back and forth because Alan has been in Hong Kong for the last year. And,
wow.
So we
did research, of course, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Absolutely.
And eating a lot of Chinese food.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's not nearly as good as it is in America for some reason.
Don't they just call that food over there?
Yeah,
they go out for American food.
You know, you should really try the American pizza in China because it tastes nothing like it does here. But they advertise as New York pizza.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's got squid in it, man.
Yeah.
That's
the secret ingredient.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, we did this entire book via email. Where the first book. Yeah. Alan and I spent many, many of hours sitting in Starbucks comparing notes and drawing pictures. And, you know, I even made a joke about this and I send Alan the picture. It's like there's this ship in the second book and it's a large carrier. And some people out there will get this reference. It's called the Tomoyuki. And so it's this large mammoth carrier that can fly, it can submerge and all this. And there was a joke where I even put it on Facebook where I drew a picture and it was just, you know, like the wavy top of the water. and I drew a really bad foot just kind of sinking into the water. And then we put that picture next to Alan's masterpiece. You know, I give him this picture of a foot in the water, and then there's the Tomoyuki submerging. Oh, you know, this is what he's doing with these really bad drawings of mine. You know, it's like how he gets these fabulous drawings from my submerged foot is beyond me.
That's a lot of fun.
Well, we definitely, well, because you guys are on the station, and since, you know, Tim, you and Scott have already done the geek seat, it's Alan's time.
It's so Alan's time, yeah.
While we're affixing him to the seat, I did want to just check in with Scott real quick and see what have you been up to, what projects you got coming out right now.
The latest one that three of us are doing together is my second CD. The first one, Within, was the name of the first one, and it did fairly well in the States and in Japan as well. And so, and then I flew here to do a signing with them for the Big in Japan thing. I had a shirt on that said Huge in Japan, but I'm huge in Japan, and so I had to be a little bit bigger than big, so I was huge in Japan. It was pretty cool. But yeah.
Huge is bigger, yeah.
But huge is bigger. I've been working a lot of music. I'm still working with the Tsunami Aid in Japan. I'm now a teacher. I went back to teaching high school level, also college level. And I've been working with athletes. I'm now on I'm thinking in English here. I'm supposed to be thinking in Japanese. I'm on the Olympic committee for the 2020 Olympics that's coming to Japan again.
Oh, wow. So congratulations.
I'm working with some of their athletes and a lot of the synchronized swimmers and some of the judo wrestlers, which are neither one of them are my specialty, but I'm good at getting people in really good shape. And so that's what I'm doing. And then I'm back here for the G-Fest again and meet up with the diehards and the new people that are coming out and all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Don't you have a radio show now too?
Oh yeah. I forgot about that. I have a weekly radio show I do now with a famous comedian in Japan. And they gave me a 3-month contract. It's now been extended a year.
That's called guaranteed airplay.
Yeah.
We're going to be big in Japan. I can feel it.
Working on one of my songs right now, and a Christmas song, actually. And we'll probably get that played on my radio program. Well, they have about 2 million listeners a week. And that's pretty great. Good. So, yeah. Wow. And they gave me a 3-month contract, and the thing's doing so well. They just gave me another year contract. And it's good. It's all good. All the kaiju stuff is good. Shin Godzilla is coming out soon, and everybody keeps asking me what it's all about. They seriously haven't even finished the movie yet, and so it'll be very close to the 29th when they get it done.
And if I may add on Scott's behalf, how I was saying was he was such a bigger part of this book. Scott is actually presenting a figure that he designed his own kaiju, and he actually has figures that he's bringing to G-Fest, and they're fabulous. And what's great about this is this kaiju that Scott created is called Polaris, and Scott graciously let me use Polaris. So I had the wonderful opportunity of creating Polaris's rise. So Polaris actually makes his debut in Big in Japan book 2.
Wow, that's very cool. Congratulations.
It's pretty special. It's pretty special. And once again, the figures look great, and wait till you see Alan's illustrations of Polaris.
Yeah,
it's fabulous.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, without further ado, I think it's time that we spend a little bit of geek seat time with Alan.
You guys are cheering him getting tied up? Wow, you guys are sadists.
I've been producing the record all week, so they're probably happy to see me tortured instead of them for a minute.
Exactly, man.
I do understand that, because I wanted to tie Tim up for, you know.
I'm not touching any of that.
And not going to do that one. All right, sir. Alan, are you ready for your first question in the geek seat?
I don't know yet. We'll find out in a second, won't we?
Mike, make the knots a little tighter, please. He's a little too chipper. Alan, what was your favorite geek out moment?
Let's see. My favorite geek out moment was probably the time I spent about an hour chatting with Jim Steranko about the composition and design.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow.
Tell us about that a little bit.
You know, are you guys familiar with the image from his one of those 70s books he did with the private eye who comes in and sees the dead lady on the bed in front of him? Do you know this image?
Yeah.
Okay. So it was about that image. And wow. You may not have noticed this about that particular image, but the whole concept behind it was to try to tell a complete story in one picture. And he did it entirely by eye leading. So your eye is focused on the private eye because of the way that he used contrast in the image. So it goes there first. And because of where the private eye is looking, you then notice the woman laying on the bed. And directly in front of her, there is a newspaper article that talks about the silk stocking killer still at large. So now you know what happened to her. And because of the environmental lines, it leads your eye back over to her dresser where you can see her silk stockings kind of falling out of the drawer. But your eye, by environmental lines, is not led to the other side of the page. So most people, the first time they see it, don't notice that the killer is still on the other side of the page. And he purposefully designed it so that your eye would get caught on the right side of the page and never drift to the left side of the page to notice this. And most of the time when I point it out to people, they, for the first time, it's fun, you know, because they didn't see it before.
That is awesome. But let's look at the flip side of that then. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Oh, man. I am a huge X-Files fan. And I think that the first episode of the new season was my biggest disappointment.
Of the new season that just came back?
I thought the new season was great, except for that first episode, man. It really bummed me out.
Oh, I've heard that from a few people, so you're not the only one on that one.
Right.
What geeks you out the most?
You know, I really get inspired by looking at great drawing and painting, as well as reading great stories. And that stuff can come from anywhere at any time. But that having been said, I feel like I see consistently amazing work from guys like David McKean and Sergio Topi and Marcos Maestro, who their work is just really, really inspirational. And I have to say, I get pretty obsessive about it.
Well, sure. But what turns your geek off?
All right, this will probably be a controversial one at the moment. I love DC and Marvel Comics, but right now I cannot read them. And the reason I can't is because I feel like every time I start reading a story, somewhere in the middle of it, I have to go buy 20 other issues to understand what in the heck's going on. Yeah. So right now I'm going to have to go with Big Two Comics, turning my geek off.
I totally understand that. Yeah, or that, or they'll reboot it right in the middle of what you're reading.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
You know, I really follow creators more than characters, but I'm going to go with Gaiman Sandman.
Cool.
Well, you technically see him every time you go to sleep, so.
That's actually, yeah, exactly, my point.
That's awesome. Wait. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Oh, man, I don't know. Cthulhu? But he can't possibly worse than our presumed presidential candidates, can he?
No.
Ooh, okay. Well.
I can hook you up with them.
I'm in Canada right now, so it doesn't matter to me. So.
Yeah, yeah.
I should have stayed in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Spoon.
The tick strikes again.
Nice. Good one, Barnes.
Have my moments.
Aren't you glad you brought your cheering section with you?
I definitely needed somebody.
This is the first time we've ever had a geek seat cheering section. This is awesome.
We're rooting for you, man.
All right, Alan, what is your ideal geek occupation?
Oh, that's an obvious one, right? Comic book artist.
Well, of course. So you want to do this full time?
I do. You know, in addition to Tim's book, I also have a book that just came out on Amazon Kindle called Wonder Cat. And it is a modern version of The Tick. Wonder Cat is a really, really bad superhero who is always trying to impress his on-again, off-again girlfriend, Police Commissioner Jordan. And he does a very bad job. But anyway, that thing came out. I've got a couple more issues of that coming out very soon. And I'm working on a comic book for Big in Japan. We're going to do a special story about the bass player because I'm a bass player. And so far, the bass player in the book hasn't been focused on, and I think we need to correct that.
I was a baseball player, so that kind of works for me, too. A lot of bases.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
You stole those
and
bases.
I've got a couple other things. I've got a couple other things that I'm hoping to get out here in the near future. But like Tim, I primarily make my living as a musician, and so it's only been recently that I've had time to really devote to the comic book thing.
That's awesome, though.
Yep. And we have Alan and I have a real fun project that we're getting ready to start that we're hoping that we can take it to conventions all over the country.
Cool.
Yep.
What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Geek occupation I would not like to do. I didn't.
We like throwing a curveball every once in a while.
Okay. How about... let's see. I would not want to have anything to do with, anything involving dance is going to be really bad for me. So let's stick with that.
So I guess the solid gold dancers are not looking for you.
No. I'm thinking about that that thing I saw at Dragon Con a few years ago where they did the zombie dance from the Michael Jackson video from way back when, and I purposely stayed away so that you would not be offended.
So we're not taking that idea to the cons nationwide.
Okay, Alan, are you ready for your final question in the geek seat?
Sure.
All right, Alan, what was your ultimate geek fantasy?
I think my ultimate geek fantasy would be to someday deserve having a signing line as long as one of Neil Gaiman's.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty long.
Yep.
Awesome.
I think that is awesome. Well, Alan, you've made it through the geek seat. Congratulations. Yay! Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $17.06.
But only here on this station.
Outstanding. Outstanding.
Fantastic.
Awesome, guys. Well, we definitely really appreciate you joining us. I know you guys are all gearing up for G-Fest coming up this weekend, correct?
Yep.
Absolutely. Yes,
If people are interested in getting a copy of Big in Japan, either the first novel or Big in Japan Book 2 Power, they are on Amazon. They will be on Kindle soon, but right now they're just on Amazon.com. If you would like, you could also go to www.biginjapanrocks.com. And if you order straight from the website, Scott and Alan and I will send you a signed copy. So if you want to do that, that's fine too. And we have G-Fest coming up next week. And then I'll be at Metacon in Minneapolis. And then down back in Atlanta, down with you guys in October for Monsterama.
Woohoo!
Uh-oh, yeah! Beware. He's coming back to Atlanta.
You know who's going to be at Monsterama? Caroline Munro.
We're absolutely.
We're going to do an 8mm presentation. So I have the Golden Voyage of Sinbad on 8mm. I have At the Earth's Core. And I found a German-dubbed 200-foot black and white with sound Star Crash.
Oh, boy. Look out. Yeah.
We're talking Marjo Gauntner and everything. Is it Gauntner? Marjo. So. You ever seen that guy, Marjo? Yes. He was an earthquake,
right,
and he was like an ordained minister at 1 year old or something like that.
Wow.
Well, we are definitely looking forward to that and looking forward to reading Big in Japan too, as well as the other projects you guys are working on. Thanks so much for joining us, guys.
Oh, thank you, guys. You guys are always great. Really appreciate the support. You guys are always good to us. Thank you.
No, thank you for having us. Absolutely.
Cool. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment. You never know. Your number might be coming up.
You are being watched. The government has a secret system. A system you asked for to keep you safe. A machine that spies on you every hour of every day. You granted it the power to see everything. To index, order, and control the lives of ordinary people. The government considers these people irrelevant. We don't. But to it, you are all irrelevant. Victim or perpetrator, if you stand in its way, we'll find you.
Yes, folks. It has happened, finally. Our numbers have come up. We're here to talk to you before we're all taken away. Yes, Mike, myself, and two other numbers have popped into existence. Let's welcome those numbers to the show. One represents a former co-host, Mr. Bobby Nash.
Hi, guys.
Are you ready to be taken away?
I am ready to run. There are Samaritan agents on the prowl.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I saw the black van pop up in front of your house, so be careful.
Yeah.
And we have Drew Leitner. Welcome, Drew.
Hello, guys.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
You have your guns ready?
I've got my guns ready. I'm ready to take out some kneecaps.
Oh, exactly. We are going to be talking all about Person of Interest. We have talked about the show in the past, and at the time, we only made it through the first, two seasons at that point.
I think it was the end of the third that we ended.
Was it the end of the third?
Yeah.
It was at the end. It was this part where the, I guess they called themselves the Founding Fathers, or the people who were trying to restore America to greatness and were trying to, you know, take down the current government and, you know, reissue what America, what they had thought America should be. But they were actually under the control of, what was it, Decima?
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting. And then that's when we found out that Decima was trying to get a hold of the machine and ended up, you know, they got a hold of Samaritan instead. So it was really interesting because we didn't even have Shaw at that point in the story. And
she was introduced.
Right. Yeah. But she wasn't a regular yet.
Right.
No, she was recurring.
She was a recurring. And then you also, Root was a bad guy still.
Yeah, although that was already starting too, but that was already starting to, I think.
Yeah, because she was a little bit. Because in the following season was when Harold put her into the mental hospital, I think.
Yeah, that was at the beginning of season three. I think she was in the mental hospital.
Okay, so that's where I think we left off. So yeah, a lot has happened since then.
Yeah, because season three, Root kind of had her own story, and then our guys were off doing their thing. Mm-hmm.
Now, exactly. when did we lose
Joss?
The cop.
Joss.
Oh yeah. Okay. Thank you. Sorry. Yeah,
that was in season three.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we hadn't lost her yet. That was like because it was the whole HR storyline also.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
And so, yeah, we went through a lot on this show. And
boy, we had no idea what was to come.
Oh, no, not at all. They basically reinvented the show halfway through.
Well, I think we all kind of knew, though, that they were building up Samaritan to be the machine's big foe, that, you know, Holmes is Moriarty, so to speak, and that the end of the show was pretty much going to come down to the machine versus Samaritan.
Oh, of course. That was never a question on it. It was, you know, once they introduced Samaritan and how they introduced it was awesome. You know, that it was basically one of, I guess, Harold's proteges was created.
Artie from Warehouse 13.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And that's also when they...
His name was Artie too, wasn't it?
And that's also when they introduced Control, was that story.
That's exactly right. And on the face of it, brilliant way to introduce it, because that episode, had they have done nothing else with it, could have been a one-off episode. Because of the way it was formatted, you didn't really realize that the Samaritan program could become that big an issue in that one episode. Mm-mm.
This show excelled in that. Things that, you know, villains that you never thought you'd see again. You know, there was no such thing as a one-off with Person of Interest.
As we said, let's put this out there. As we said at the beginning of the show, we are going to spoil the hell out of the final season, folks, if you haven't seen it yet.
Absolutely.
Or any of the seasons.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Well, we were, you know, very lucky to get a concluding fifth season, because from what I understand, you know, the show had pretty much run its course with CBS, and they were not particularly keen on picking it up. And even when they did so, it seemed like it was hesitant. They were hesitant to do so, and they were hesitant to let the producers know that this was going to be the last. So I do think that's why the finale of season four felt like it could be a series finale if need be.
Yes.
And then season five, it was the producers who made the decision that this was going to be, even though CBS wasn't telling them that, they were like, you know what, this, we can read the signs. So let's go ahead and announce it ourselves and write it as if it is the last one.
It was a good way to finish up the story, and they closed almost every loop that they had out there. Even brought back a villain who was just a one-off villain, like The Voice. And
they brought back a lot of folks and characters that I wasn't expecting, and they sort of still left some people out there that I was hoping to hear from. But then again, you're not sure, because if you hear from them, they might die.
Now the voice was one of my favorite villains. Well, that episode was that he first premiered on. I believe it was called Last Call, and it was about a 911 operator, and Finch, her number had come up, and Finch had gone, took a job as a 911 operator so he could keep an eye on her, and that whole episode was just great.
Exactly, and because he was working in the office with her, and he was, you know, seeing, and the voice was blackmailing her into doing something. Mm-hmm. And you thought, oh, maybe this might be the new big bad, but that was it. He was gone. And because he was, you know, he even like challenged Finch and said, you know, I'm going to find out who you are. And, you know, and it was a great ending. And you went, ooh, this is good.
Yeah, it was great.
We had a lot of, and we also had other recurring, or returning characters in that last season. Some of our previous numbers, we find out, have been recruited by the machine, which I thought was a very interesting way to make sense of some of what could seem like random episodes that weren't part of the larger tapestry.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, and I thought that was great too, because, you know, one of the tropes of TV is, isn't it amazing all their numbers happen to be within driving distance?
Right. Yeah.
Details.
So the fact that the machine is prepared, the machine is putting together other teams to handle things in different areas.
Well, you find out, brilliant. You found out earlier in the show, though, that the machine was also working for the government at the same time it was working for Harold.
All right, right. I mean, the machine, I mean, that's what the machine was designed to do. I mean, it's designed to be an anti-terror device.
Right, because it was, and wasn't it, because it was working with Northern Lights.
Right, well, it was Northern Lights. The machine was Northern Lights. The machine's primary function was stop terrorism. But it saw, because the machine saw everything, it saw these smaller problems, and Harold's back door into the machine allowed him to get those numbers that Northern Lights didn't care about.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And Northern Lights ignored those because Northern Lights was just looking at the big picture. They weren't worried about, you know, smaller things.
Exactly. Was Northern Lights not getting those numbers, or were they actively ignoring them, or were they only going? I got the impression that they were only going to Harold.
They did, because the way it was set up, those numbers, the numbers were all in the machine, but because the machine, they were deemed irrelevant, the machine just deleted them. It did not send them on to the big Northern Lights.
Right.
Harold set up his back door so that he could get those irrelevant numbers before they were erased.
Didn't the machine erase every night at midnight or something like that?
That's what Harold had it designed to do.
Yeah.
Right. But we learn, I don't remember what season it happened in, but we learned later that the machine was building companies that had people where it was printing out its information and had people re-entering it daily so it wouldn't forget. Because the one guy discovers the code. And so they find out about it because his number comes up. But the machine had set up these dummy corporations full of just data entry people who are getting these dot matrix printouts every day and are typing all that information right back into the computer every day.
Exactly, because the machine had become so sentient that it basically was creating, like you said, creating shell companies, creating warehouses and, you know, all these different things to keep it in existence, because we found out later that it was living in the electrical grid.
Mm-hmm. Right, yep. Because every night when it deleted all of its numbers, the machine basically reset to it, you know. So if the machine would basically die every day until it became self-aware and started having these backups created to keep itself alive.
Yep, very true. And that's what was interesting about the machine was it was basically, as Root put it, God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was God, but it was also Harold's child.
Yep.
I mean, it wasn't. Yeah. Yeah. It was. You know, still learning. Still. And Harold was not. I mean, it was. Root said it was God, but it was not. It did not have the freedom that God has. I mean, Harold still had the child in handcuffs, so to speak, because Harold was, as this season was a big conflict as to whether or not to let the machine loose. I mean, Root kept saying, you know, let it loose, and that's the only way it can defeat Samaritan. And, you know, ultimately, that was the decision that Harold did not want to make.
Right. Because had Harold not handicapped the machine at the beginning, it's a good bet Samaritan would not have gained a foothold. The machine probably would have stopped Samaritan a lot earlier.
That's probably right. True.
But I think Finch was always afraid that the machine would become like Samaritan was.
Yes.
And that's why he put all those restraints on there in the first place.
Sure, sure. Well, I'm sure at some point Finch saw Terminator. You know, and Finch is no fool, you know. So.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a lot of, I mean, you know, there's a lot of similarities. It's not, you know, it's not the action-packed, you know, cybernetic nightmare, but in a way, you know, Person of Interest deals with a lot of the same issues, and it's very, very subversive. You know, I often thought to myself while watching the show, even though this information is in the hands of people like John and like Harold, and they're doing the right thing, I'm like, still, it freaks me out that someone could get that close and all of a sudden just, you know, clone my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Or many of the other things that they do. It's pretty scary.
Or how many times a day you are captured on camera.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, when they're hiding from Samaritan these last two seasons, how difficult that really is because of all the places that are monitored.
Heck, mm-hmm. Your own computer.
Yes.
Has a camera on it that you might not even know phone. It's on. Yeah.
Your phones, have cameras that face in both directions.
Traffic cameras, security cameras, ATM cameras, you know.
Yeah,
absolutely. People playing Pokemon.
Oh, God.
Sorry, I saw that the other day online. I just had to throw that in there.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, had Person of Interest continued, I'm sure there would have been a show on that.
I'm sure.
Well, you guys remember the episode where Samaritan had the game it was playing with people of intelligence. It was like trying to
recruit.
That's right.
Trying to recruit. That was pretty scary.
Well, and exactly.
All the kids, we found it in that same episode. Samaritan donated iPads to a bunch of young school kids that were full of games to test their intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
As scary as it is, though, and, you know, even though, like I said, you kind of almost feel like Root's right, that this is Harold's creation. Harold should trust the machine, and the machine should, you know, it would be okay. It'll be all right if we let the machine go, because the machine is not Samaritan, et cetera, et cetera. But then again, if you think about the series, certainly the last 2 years of it, every case, every quote-unquote irrelevant number that came up was relevant to the machine's interest. And when you go back and look at how the machine had taken teams of people that had been saved or whatnot and is using them to help the relevant numbers, you kind of wonder right from the beginning if there was any such thing as an irrelevant number as far as the machine goes.
Right, right. No, it's a very good point.
It's amazing looking at all these episodes how much the machine or Samaritan was controlling people's lives.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's what I mean by, you know, subversive. This is a scary show.
Yeah. And also,
it's so damn entertaining, though.
Yeah. But also, too, even though the machine and Samaritan are not like characters, they're not walking around and talking to us per se, I love the fact that you could tell which way an episode was going to skew depending on which computer was giving us the flashbacks and and the coming back from commercials and all that stuff.
Yeah. Credit to the graphics staff.
Yes.
For letting us know like which viewpoint we were looking at.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's interesting because it took a while to figure out what the dotted lines around people's heads meant on computer images.
Yep. And if you think about it,
We were kind of talking about that when we reviewed it like a few years ago, where, you know, because we were just starting to notice that, you know, hey, the lines around these characters are different than these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep. The white, the yellow, the red.
The blue. Remember, the blue was around Shaw because she was working the relevant numbers.
Yep.
And
so I think not to go too far over this, but I think it's kind of relevant, if you'll pardon the pun, when we last talked about this show, both Root and Shaw were recurring, but within short time, they became regular members. And for a lot of fans, they were not happy about that. It had been the, you know, Harold and Reese show, and where they were out solving, you know, solving crimes or whatever, trying to prevent crimes. And all of a sudden the show had now become something much more epic. It had, you know, now two female characters added to it, both of which were, you know, not extremely likable characters, although I love them both. And I think it did get some heat, and that probably in the long run, that probably didn't help their ratings going forward.
Mm-hmm. No, possibly not. 'Cause if you remember, though, back when we were still talking about the show, it was at the time, like you said, it was Harold, it was John, but also it was Joss, and it was also Fusco.
Fusco.
Right, right.
So, and remember, Fusco started out as a bad guy. As
yes,
a
he did.
Corrupt, yeah. As a corrupt cop.
Well, actually, if you think...
Almost everybody did.
I was going to say, if you think about it, yeah, every person on the Machine's team has pretty questionable background.
Except Joss.
Joss never
except
did.
Except Joss. Yeah. Except Joss. And, you know, which is probably why she had to die. No.
And Bear was pretty cool too.
Yeah, but Bear started out as a guard dog for the mob.
That's true. You're right. Absolutely. So, I forgot about that.
but yeah, they all had questionable backgrounds, but they all had the skills necessary to do what the Machine needed. They were also pliable. The Machine could, they could, John, because, you know, John at the pilot is ready to commit suicide. You know, he's ready to, he's done. He's ready to just let his life be over. And the Machine and Harold give John purpose. Because I'm pretty certain the Machine probably gave Finch John's number to find him.
Because I think you're right.
Because there is that flashback where Harold's still in the wheelchair and he bumps into Reese and he opens a file and he's got a file on Reese.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Machine is grabbing people that it can mold into what it needs. And that certainly was the case with Root, because she had more of a one-on-one connection with the Machine than even Harold did.
Well, exactly. She even went as far as having the implant put in,
mm-hmm.
so she could talk to the Machine right on.
Yeah. And
if you think about it, the Machine put these characters through basically a redemption.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very much so. Well, you even got so comfortable with the characters and liked the characters, you started rooting for someone who was even a bad guy, like Elias.
Elias.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was one of the biggest surprises this season. When they reveal that Elias is alive and in the safe house, mm-hmm. I about dropped out of my chair. I thought... I just could not believe that they had done that and pulled that over on me. I did not expect that at all. And it was good to see him, if it only was for a couple of episodes.
I'll go you one better. The season before, Elias always had the right-hand man, the guy with the scar on his face.
Oh, Anthony. Yep.
Anthony, thank you. I was yep. blanking on his name. Anthony's a bastard. I mean, Anthony's killing people, and Anthony does most of Elias's dirty work. We're not supposed to like him, but there's the episode where Anthony dies to save Elias and John.
Oh, that's a great episode.
And you feel bad.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, you know, if Anthony had died the season before, I'd have went, glad he's gone. Now I'm sitting here. No, they killed Anthony.
Well, how genius of it was it for that season before the final one that the whole season was not only Samaritan going on and they were looking for Shaw the whole time, mm-hmm. but you also had the whole gang war going on.
Gang war, yeah.
Yep.
Person of interest, they managed to juggle so many storylines and villains. Because, you know, we had HR, and while we had HR, there was also the stuff with the mob. Plus,
I love it. Like, just when you least expect it, here come the Russians again.
Yes. You know.
So fuck up everything.
Or we think we're through with the patriotic guys, and then they show up and kidnap Harold, or the beauty of the one with where we find out, just like they pulled it over on us with Elias, where we get Elias's number, and it turns out we don't know he's the crime boss, and turns out he is. So later we get another crime boss, and they do the exact same thing to us again, and we fall for it again. So, yeah, just wonderful writing on that show. It's up in my top 10 well-written shows, I would say.
Mine too. I mean, it kept me guessing. It kept me entertained. It never felt old. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, do I think it ended before its time? I don't think so. I think they did a pretty good job at wrapping everything up and making it feel like they were pretty much done. I mean, could it have gone another, you know, five seasons? Sure. I have no doubt that I would have liked, but there would have been some massive changes regardless.
Yeah, it couldn't have been Samaritan that whole time.
No.
That story needed to end.
Yes, yeah. You're right. You're right.
Now, one thing I will say, as much as I – the fact that this show works on the writing scale, they do break one of writing's, you know, number one – one of the top rules of writing. And here's an example. Mr. Reese, what's going on? Hang on a second, Finch. I'm in the middle of something. Take your time, Mr. Reese. Okay, Finch, hang on a sec. And they keep using their names over and over, which is a dialogue no-no. If you're ever right, editors will tell you, don't do that. And yet they do it, and it works. It becomes one of the hallmarks of the show.
No, that's very true. And Mr. Reese, what's going on there? You know, it's just like, it's like, no, you don't do that.
And the fact that Jim Caviezel's just low-key approach to dialogue. Like, even when he's in a shootout, if you couldn't hear the gunshots, you would think he was sitting in an easy chair somewhere. Because he's just so measured and calm. And yeah.
Mr. Reese, I always compared him to Batman. He was like Batman without the mask.
I thought he was either Batman or the Punisher.
Sure. I mean, he's tough. Just like those characters, for sure. Well, I have to give the and I echo what Bobby said about the writers, but also the casting.
Yes.
Because when this show started, you know, I had only known Jim Caviezel as Christ. I had only known Michael Emerson as Ben.
Linus.
I was going to try.
Yes.
Yeah, I wanted to say another swear word there, because that guy drove me crazy, and I couldn't stand Ben Linus. Henson, is it
Taraji P. Henson?
Right. She had been doing a lot of the comedies, right?
Yes. She did a lot of comedies and romantic comedies. And
Amy Acker, we had seen her flex her. She's played a lot of roles, so we'd seen her flex a little bit. But she'd primarily been playing, like, you know, nerdy love interest, shy girls.
Yeah.
And Sarah Shahi had been playing these sort of
goofy,
wild comedic, sexy characters. And all of the characters that they're playing in Person of Interest are against their type, and there's not one moment, not to mention Enrico, mm-hmm. who I had just seen as Veronica Mars's dad and was loving him as that, playing a mobster.
Yeah, because he was also, of course, in Galaxy Quest.
Yep.
Right. And all of them are playing against type, and yet now I will probably remember them more for these parts than mm-hmm. anything else they do in their careers.
And I think, you know, someone mentioned it earlier, that as much of these characters grew, I think certainly the biggest and probably the most underrated performance on the show is Kevin Chapman as Fusco.
I agree.
Because I remember when the first hints of someone's going to die happened in season 3. And I remember the first thought I had was, not Fusco, please. You can't kill Fusco and you can't kill Bear. You know? Yeah. So those were my picks for if there's any two people left standing. And I was a little off on that. I did figure that at the very end of it, I figured that there would be two people left standing. It would be Fusco, Root, and Bear.
Well,
so I was a little off, but
let's talk about that a little bit, because I mean, obviously, leading up to the finale, a Person of Interest is not afraid to kill off characters. So, watching, you know, as the series winds down, the last, you know, 3 or 4 episodes, I think we're all getting a bit nervous as to who's going to live and who's going to die. Are we pretty happy with how everybody's, you know, fate turned out?
I am. I mean, the biggest surprise for me was, well, not that they killed off, that Root died, but the fact that it happens like 4 or 5 episodes before the end.
Yeah.
You know, that was a surprise. But I did love the way they were still able to use Amy Acker.
It was almost like, you know, the fact that, yeah, because it seems kind of, I mean, she doesn't die heroically. And it seems
she does.
She does.
Saving Harold's life.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. But it's not like a big sacrifice. It's not like a huge, right. Overly dramatic moment. You know.
Yeah, she didn't dive in front of a bullet.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's what I meant. And so you're kind of like, well, that was kind of odd. And yet the way that they transformed her, it was almost perfect. She's the voice of the machine. She had been the voice of the machine for like 2 seasons, but we hadn't really made that connection like that before. And I thought that it was beautiful the way they integrated her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And her voice.
Right. And isn't it after that the machine starts talking to Finch directly?
Well, yeah, because it was in that episode that he told the machine to pick its own voice.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
Because he said he never gave the machine a voice because he wanted the machine to be able to. So he told the machine to do it. And it settled on Root. And literally the first time it talked to him, that's when Fusco was at the morgue and he found Root.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very poetic right there.
And the beauty to Michael Emerson of how he played it, because there's this look that crosses his face when he realizes that the machine has picked Root's voice.
He is so, I don't know why he hasn't been nominated for this part before. Maybe he has, I don't know, but I don't think he's won anything. But this season in particular, there are some moments that Michael Emerson gives as Harold that, I mean, are just outstanding moments. The scene where he's in the police station and he decides, I mean, he makes the decision that he's going to be going on the offensive now, and he knows exactly what he's going to do. And it's a Harold we've really not seen before. And yet we it's earned because of, you know, both Elias and Root, who both start off as villains to Harold. Now he is obviously affected by their death right in front of him. And that sets his course of action.
That was a pretty major episode, though, anyway, because you lost 2 major characters in that story.
And really, that's really the end of Harold being, because Harold takes a dark turn.
Yep.
And I mean, in that episode, when he's being interrogated, and the cop thinks Harold's talking to him, Harold's actually talking to the machine. And he goes, and Harold just does that. I wasn't talking to you. And it's just like, it's, you know, you realize at this point, Harold just went to the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been there before.
Exactly.
Which is something that I don't think any of us knew.
Mm-mm. Did you think he was talking to the machine or was it talking to Samaritan?
No, he's talking to.
Yeah, he's talking to the machine.
Yeah. Well, actually. No, I think he was talking to the Samaritan because the machine was kind of dead at that point.
You're right.
He was talking to Samaritan because he was saying it, you know, I've tried to do things my way. Now I'm going to have to do things your way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're right. He's talking.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But and at that point it stops becoming Samaritan versus the machine and it becomes Samaritan versus Harold.
Yep.
And poor Samaritan didn't stand a chance.
Right.
No. Well, and unfortunately, the machine is a casualty as well.
Yes.
I mean, yes and no.
Well, the machine has a backup plan, but Harold doesn't know that.
Right.
No.
And Harold is, is willing to sacrifice the machine. Now, the machine is willing to sacrifice itself, but is it really? Mm-hmm. Because the machine knows it has a backup.
Right.
So, I don't know if the machine's sacrifice at the end is really that honest.
Right. But also, if you think about it, I mean, Harold's willing to sacrifice his life to stop it. John is willing to sacrifice his life, not so much for the machine, but to save Harold.
Right.
Which he does.
Yeah, which he does, and has always been his purpose.
Yes.
It was very, very surprising when John said he made a pact with the machine. We don't even know how long ago he made that pact.
We do. It's in an episode.
It's when when Harold gets kidnapped, I think by Root.
By Root, yes.
He makes a pact with the machine that as far as Harold's concerned, he will do whatever it takes.
That was back in season 2, wasn't it?
Yeah. Because I know. The machine starts contacting John when Harold gets kidnapped. And John's basically like, I am not taking care of your numbers until, you know, we take care of Harold. And Harold, you know, I will always protect Harold first. And it's in that bit where they start, where John basically says, if you want me to continue doing anything, I'm not doing it without Harold.
Yeah. Well, I think the machine realizes its most important human is Harold to its survival.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's the machine's father.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, I mean, the machine really is the star of the show, even though it's kind of a, you know, and kudos to the show too. I mean, when this show started with season 1 and episode 1, the machine, did any of you think the machine was that important?
Mm-mm. No.
No, that's the MacGuffin that gives us our number.
I was going to say, it's the device, sure.
Right. And so, just like Lost before it, because a lot of the same people are involved, it started out making you think it's one thing, and it's just this show about two guys going out and helping people. We've seen that kind of show many times that morphs into a show about two artificial intelligences fighting for control of the planet.
And I think the big reason for that is Jonathan Nolan.
I agree.
Jonathan was one of my main attractions when I first started watching this series. I mean, I was interested in the actors and producers, but when I heard that it was co-created by Jonathan Nolan, I was like, okay, this is not going to be your average procedural. This is going to be something different. And I think it's Jonathan throughout the entire run of the series that's kept it to be a lot more than just, hey, let's solve some irrelevant numbers this week.
Right.
Well, if you think about it, how the machine and Samaritan evolved, they basically became characters. Main characters.
Yep.
They had personalities.
They did, and I don't think it was really necessary. I guess because you had the machine's avatar was Root, although I never really felt like she was more of an advocate for the machine rather than an avatar. I didn't really care for – I never really bought the Samaritan avatar of the kid. That never really worked for me, and I'm glad they only used it like a handful of times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Recently, this last season, in the virtual reality.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All that stuff that Shaw was going through was, you know, very interesting and very, you know, I could – you know, that was confusing. I mean, they really did a good job presenting that storyline with her.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was basically Samaritan's way of torturing her, trying to break her.
How many times? Yeah. Like hundreds of times.
Thousands. Right? Yeah. Thousands.
And her making it through it is unbelievable.
Yeah. Especially when you figure, like, it's her at the end. I mean, it's her and Bear and the machine continuing the work.
Or the fact that it's Root that keeps her grounded, because if you think back to how she and Root met, it was not as pleasant. you know, their first meeting, you know, Root had captures and tortures Shaw.
I think the fact that Shaw's got a personality disorder, they pretty much, you know, tell us that right away and in flashbacks, that probably helps her through that ordeal. I'm not sure of anybody who has a huge range of emotions and is willing to, you know, utilize them all. I don't think they would be able to survive like she did.
Yeah.
Well, one thing she is in some ways a machine herself, and now she's plugged right in. She's got the chip, so she is almost, out of all the characters, she's like the perfect extension of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the machine and Bear.
There's your spinoff.
And she did get her revenge, you know, for Root's death.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. So I'm curious. I know we're getting close on time, so I'm curious. Do you guys have a favorite moment or two from the show? Because I have a couple that really stand out for me, but I'm curious, of all five seasons, is there one or two that just stands out to you as when you think of this show, that's the first thing you think of?
You never know what to expect on this show. The one that really got me was Elias's first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
because when you know you recognize the actor and he's a number. Okay, he's a school teacher who witnessed a mob hit,
and he always plays nice guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's always the nice guy, and he turns out to be this big bad, and it was like, okay, that's the oh crap moment for me on the show. But the other moment that really got to me was the episode where Joss came back, but it was only in John's head.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very good episode. Very intense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Those two had great chemistry together.
They did.
I'll tell you the episode that really just made me go, this is now one of my top five shows ever. You know, cause we were watching it, we were enjoying it. You could tell that there was a storyline building. They were not afraid to use characters, you know, again and again, and when you least expected them, and have storylines like that, intricate storylines. And then it got to the point, I remember the end of the first season, they had so many enemies. I was thinking, oh my God, like how are these two guys going to continue? Because it seems like every other storyline, they're making enemies that could come back. So really well developed, but I'll tell you what, that first episode that, introduced Shaw and the team, solving the relevant numbers blew my mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was watching a different show and, you know, with Reese as a guest star, seemingly dying like every so often. And I loved it. I wanted to watch that show. I mean, it was like, this is a good, these guys are so talented that they're putting the show together. I don't even care that the people that I've been watching for whatever it was, 2 years, are not here just yet, because this is interesting and a side of the machine that I had not even thought about before. And it opened up the whole Person of Interest universe to become, I think, even bigger and better.
Yeah, I love the fact that in that episode that when we see John come around the corner, we're thinking, oh, our hero's here. And but looking at it from her point of view, it's another guy with a gun and she shoots him.
Yep, and she shoots him down.
How many poor times did that guy get shot?
Oh,
there was a couple times where I thought, you know, oh, I'm like, they just killed Reese.
Yep. Well, I think it was about 52 in the last episode. Because they wanted to really make sure you knew he was dead.
Yes, bullets, 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 and then a missile.
But you never saw his body, so he can still be out.
Did.
That's true. Because he did.
No bodies, not dead.
Yeah. What about you, Drew?
Let's see. There were several episodes that stood out to me. Of course, the Elias episode. I really liked the episode with Elias where they were in his secret building and he had his secret passage to escape and all that. Love that episode. And I like some of the more fun episodes with Zoe Morgan. Do you remember her, the fixer?
I miss seeing her this season. She's the one character that I'm like, oh, please show Zoe at least one last time.
She was always a fun character.
The chemistry between her and Reese were awesome.
Oh, yeah. So I love the episodes with those. One of them where they played husband and wife was pretty hilarious.
Oh, when they went to suburbia?
Yes.
Yes. Anything we could make John miserable was a good episode.
And then in season four, there was an episode with a bounty hunter that was pretty hilarious too. So it was always fun where they had a mix of, you know, serious episodes and then fun episodes like those. And that's one of the reasons why I love the show so much. They had a great mix of comedy and a great mix of action and seriousness.
I have two moments that happened in the fourth season that really stand out for me. And one is the one where we're seeing everything from the machine's point of view. And it's the one where Shaw is supposedly, we think she's killed at the end of it. And the machine is running through different scenarios.
Oh, that's,
and the machine starts to speed things up to run through more. And instead of actually doing dialogue, there's one pass through where they're walking up and just describing what they would be doing. Blah, blah, blah. Sexual innuendo.
Witty dialogue.
Yeah. A stern look of disapproval. Hilarious. In the middle of what is like the fight of their lives. How are they going to survive it? We get this absolute moment of hilarity.
And insight as to what the machine does.
Exactly.
How the machine sees this and works. We've seen it with other characters, you know, like Sherlock Holmes has his Sherlock vision, and you know, they've done that with other major characters like that to see what the way they see things and things play out. But the fact that we get to see it like the machine does is pretty eye opening.
Yeah. And you see that the machine just sometimes just does not understand these people. And the end of that same season, that the last episode of season four, the last 10 or 15 minutes, I will never be able to hear Welcome to the Machine from Pink Floyd the same way.
Yeah, that's why in a lot of ways I thought they were done. Because they're like, okay, we're done. Now's the time to play this song.
Yeah. Now it has a whole new meaning for me when I hear that song. And I think the one other one, the one that made me go, yeah, this is my show. Because I was not excited about this show when I first heard about it. You know, it's like, oh, it's two guys going out and solving crimes. So it's the guy from Lost. Dude, I don't care. But well, I watched the first episode.
But that was the reason I started watching it, because of the guy from Lost.
But nothing I had seen, none of the trailers, nothing I'd read about it made me think, oh, I'm going to love this. But I watched the first episode, give it a shot. And as Drew, you mentioned earlier that it felt like Batman to you. I remember posting on social media at the end of it, I think that's one of the best Batman stories I've seen in a long time.
Exactly. That initial fight on the subway.
Yes.
In the very first episode, that was pure Batman.
Right there. That's what had me hooked on the show. I saw previews and stuff of it, so I wanted to check it out. And then when I started watching, I'm like, hey, this is kind of like, this is like Batman without the mask. And you had the Batman-like character, and then Finch was more like Oracle.
Yeah. When we've got that scene of John standing on top of the church with the binoculars. I mean, how is that not Batman?
Yeah, you were just thinking, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da.
And it was that, and it was also the fact that we've been trying to save this victim, who turns out at the end we find out is not the victim. And at that moment I realized anything can happen on this show, that this show could surprise me. And yeah, so it was those kind of moments. And I mean, there's a lot more. You know, we talk about how badass John is. And I know Mike and I have discussed this many times. You notice he's really badass when he's fighting against people that aren't trained. When he fights against people that are trained, John does get his ass kicked from time to time.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
And I love that fact, too, because it's he's come up against someone that knows his trick. So now he's got to go. He's got to try something else.
And it's always funny, though, because whenever he used to walk into a bar and it's like, oh, those poor people don't stand a chance.
Because you know there's always going to be someone crash come out the window.
Yeah. They just show him going into the bar, and then all of a sudden you see people flying out the window and stuff, and he just walks on out.
And he said his suit is not even wrinkled or stained or anything. Yeah. Well, I loved it for the first two seasons. He was the man in the suit.
The man in the suit.
That was basically his Batman costume.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
I do love that also that they brought that back into the last season when the police commissioner or lieutenant whatever is talking to Fusco and he's like, you know, this that guy was... looks an awful lot like the man in the suit. And I was like, wow, it took you guys a long time to detect it.
That was the final episode, actually.
Yeah. And then Fusco goes, well, there goes my pension. Exactly.
Oh, that was awesome. But I have to say, the true star of the show has to be Bear.
Bear
was a great addition.
Yeah.
You know, just knowing Bear was there. Mm-hmm.
Judy was like, nothing's going to happen to the dog, is he?
Nope. Not in this show.
Oh, yeah. So I thought it was great. And they had no problem taking out characters, you know. And if you haven't watched Person of Interest, why are you listening to us in the first place?
I was going to say, yeah. We've just spoiled the hell out of it for you. But
it's on Netflix.
It's Netflix. It's on Amazon Prime. It's, you know, it's on all the streaming services.
The final season comes out on DVD and Blu-ray next week, July 19th. So if you're buying it that way, that's another option.
It'll be up on the Amazon store.
And this is a show that, you know, I mean, as you can tell from all of us, we know what happened. We've watched it all, and yet we're going to go back and watch it again. So
yes,
definitely.
I might actually start it from this beginning.
I actually watched the whole series this year before the last season came out.
Nice. Yeah, because we had a lot of time to kill.
Yeah, yep. It was a year between seasons.
Mm-hmm. It was like I knew it was dead when they announced that, you know, they said, well, Person of Interest will be coming back, but it will not be in the fall. And then when I saw that it wasn't,
it was like, and we're not sure when it's coming back.
Exactly. We're not sure if it's in the spring. It's like,
and then it's going to be like, it's going to be on two nights this week. It's going to be on three episodes next week. Then two. Like, yeah. They're burning that sucker off.
Exactly. Yeah. There's 13 episodes. They just want to get it out of the picture.
And they didn't even bother to go previously on Person of Interest. They just said, let's get into it. And you know,
but most of the episodes worked better that way this season. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. Well, there were more surprises that way.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, there's been a petition out there to bring the show back.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, look, I mean, we all miss it. And I understand where that's coming from. But the story's been told. I'm good. You know, we have this beautiful thing. You know, at some point, if the powers that be want to, you know, resurrect it, continue it on in some form, yeah, I'll tune in. But, you know, I certainly don't want a diluted, you know, product. And I don't suspect that the ratings were that good that, you know, CBS or anybody else is looking to continue it, because it's just, you know, it's kind of is what it is.
Right. Plus, it's one of those things, too. CBS didn't own the show.
Right.
And that's going to become an issue. That's becoming more and more an issue. And this could be a whole other episode. But with shows that... You know, channels now that don't own shows, they're getting shorter and shorter runs because the show, like CBS, makes no money off the streaming or the DVDs or anything like that.
Mm-mm, exactly.
Yeah, it is a Warner Brothers show, not unlike Supergirl.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. How about that? Kind of, yeah. Be interesting if it was the same universe. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden. Person of Interest takes place in Vancouver. How about that? That could be interesting.
We want to. It is a Batman show.
Touche, my friend. Touche. Hey, they could have Harold as Oracle, like you had mentioned earlier, instead. So, Mr. Queen, you have this coming up. The machine gives you a 55%. Yeah. That could actually work. All right. We want to hear from you guys at home. You know, what are your favorite person of interest memories? We definitely want to hear from you guys on this one. It was a great show and it's going to be missed, but you know, thank goodness we have Netflix, like we had mentioned earlier. And you know, please turn some friends onto it. It is a smart show. It keeps you on your toes and it's always surprising. And it's hard to find that with a good TV show nowadays. So let's take a quick break and we will be back with the Con Report.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this geek girl is talking about Pokemon Go. Now, the new Pokemon app hit the U.S. on July 6th and has been getting a lot of attention, good and bad. Just be careful what you believe from the bad. A lot of those articles should get a run through Snopes before you decide to share them on social media, because a lot of them aren't true. Now, Pokemon Go is an app where you can catch Pokemon with your mobile phone. There are Pokemon gyms and Pokestops in cities and all over towns, and its purpose is to get people up and walking and around trying to catch them all. Like anything with your phone, though, you need to use caution. Look up and watch where you're walking, and don't go into unsafe or unfamiliar areas where you're not sure if you'll be safe. Also, put the phone up when you're driving. Just like texting, you shouldn't play Pokemon Go in your car. However, most Pokestops are parks, gyms, and local monuments around your town. Some are even at malls and restaurants. So, as long as you catch that Pikachu in a familiar place, you should be able to enjoy and have fun with the app. It does require you to have your location on your phone, and the app does drain the battery life of your phone, even with the battery saver mode on, pretty fast. I know my poor phone has been losing its battery a lot earlier in the day than normal. So have those phone chargers or external batteries ready when you decide to go out and play. Also, have fun. This game is meant to get you up and walking and enjoying catching all those Pokemon and battling those other trainers at gyms. Have fun with it while also getting some exercise. Thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Last week, it wasn't a convention, but it had that feel to it. I attended Doctor Who Comic Day at Borderlands in Greenville, South Carolina. And the event was not just at Borderlands. There was a lot of local comic shops throughout the country and throughout the world that were, you know, had promotions and were celebrating Doctor Who Comics Day and actually promoting the new Titan Comics series of Doctor Who books. And our good friend Robert Young was one of those persons, and we went to Borderlands, which is owned and run by our good friend Robert Young, was one of the stores that was hosting the event, and they had a fun time. He had two artists that have done exclusive Borderland covers for Titan Doctor Who books. Our good friend Kelly Yates and Tony Chastain, and I was able to interview all three of them, actually, at the event, and we're actually airing that clip on the newest episode of Earth Station Who. So if you want to hear what happened on that day and with that interview with those guys, I definitely recommend that you check out ESW for that interview. It was a lot of fun to do. The whole event was fun. Obviously, people were coming out in costumes. So like I said, it felt like a convention in a lot of ways. And it was just a fun time at the comic shop. So I definitely thank Robert and his staff for their hard work, because that store was busy all day. So it wasn't an easy day for them, but they had smiles on their faces and they were all pleasant to be around. So good credit, big credit to them for that event and hosting much of that. Look, Robert has events going on all the time. So go to we'll have a link in the show notes. Go to the Facebook page or the website and check out the events that he's going to have, because he's like almost every month He seems to have some event at his store, so you want to check it out and support him. And if you can't get out to the store, we hope to see you at South Carolina Comic Con next year, because he puts that on that event as well. So, okay, well, that happened last weekend, July 16th, which is upcoming. This Saturday, I believe, is the Speakeasy Electric Swing at the Red Light Cafe in Atlanta, Georgia. Of course, our good friend Q is the guy behind the tunes that everybody's swinging to. So you want to definitely check that out. On July 30th, that's at the end of the month, is Dr. Geek Science Fair. That's in Celebration, Florida. And we had Dr. Scott on last week to talk about it, and it sounds like a great event. It's a free event, and it's about science and entertainment. So definitely, if you are anywhere in the Celebration, Florida area, Central Florida area, you'll want to go there. Bring the family. It is a free event. You can find out more about that at drgeeklab.com. And again, we'll have a link for that, as all these events, in the show notes. August 14th is the Atlanta Comic Convention. That is a one-day show at the Marriott Century Center. Mike and I will be there. We won't have a table, but we will probably be like searching through back issues or chatting with someone.
Pop figures.
So if you want to meet up, please reach out to us, because we'll meet you there and we can chat about the show or anything else that's on your mind. Friend of the station, as well as a guest here on tonight's show, Bobby Nash, he will be attending that, and he will have a table with his new books and new comics on for sale as well, so you can support him. August 19th is the August issue or edition of the Speakeasy Electric Swing at the Red Light Cafe. So for those people who are not able to go in July, it seems to happen every month. So you definitely will have another opportunity to go and have fun. And if you had such a good time at the July show, of course, you'll definitely want to go back in August and in September and so on and so on. So it is a looks like a fun event. And we definitely, you know, it's cool that Q has this going on every month, because it is a unique event in a lot of ways. And it's very popular. So check it out. And then at the end of August, well, it's actually the beginning of September, Labor Day weekend, the 2nd through the 5th, is Dragon Con. Can you put an echo in my voice to make it sound like more impressive? Exactly. Almost all of the ESO network is going to be there. We're looking forward to it. We'll be recording our 7th episode of the Dragon Con Report in a couple weeks. So you'll want to tune in for that. In order, you can catch up on 1 through 6. They are available for download now for your listening pleasure. And they are full of a lot of tips and changes. This is the 30th anniversary of Dragon Con coming up, and there's going to be a lot of changes to the event. A lot of tracks and areas are changing hotels. So to find out about the latest information about all the changes, as well as some unique discussions that we've been having this year on the event, please check out that podcast. That's about it. So if you've got an event that's happening in July and August, and even in September, that you want us to help you promote or take part in, please reach out to us, because we love talking about conventions.
Well, that's going to wrap up the episode for tonight, and I want to thank our guests so much for being here. Mr. Nash.
Man, it's so nice to be back. You know, I feel like up here on the station, I'm not being watched.
Oh, yeah, right. I've been paranoid for the last week. What do you mean?
Well, you may not be watched, but we hope you're being listened to.
Ah, well, there you go.
That's a whole nother story. So what do you got going on? Anything you want to shout out about?
By the time you hear this, the first issue of my new ongoing comic book series, Domino Lady Threesome from Moonstone Books, will be in comic shops. It's a new team-up series. The first two issues are being written by myself and Nancy Holder, who's been on the show with us before. With issue 3, I take over as the solo writer. So I would love to continue writing this series for a while. So go out and buy copies, please.
Very awesome, sir. And of course, Drew, you want to make the big announcement?
Yes. There's finally Earth Station DCU.
Woohoo! Yes, folks, ESO Network is growing once again. So what's ESO DCU going to be about, sir?
Basically, everything DC Universe. The television shows, the movies, the comics.
Awesome. And are you doing it on your own? Or?
Nope, I have a co-host, Cletus Jacobs.
Excellent.
Started with me on episode... Well, he was on episode 3 with me and Mike Gordon. We talked about DC Universe, and then starting with episode 4, he became the co-host.
I do understand that. You know, somebody sitting in with me and then just never going away. It's pretty awesome.
Look, in all seriousness, I got to be on 2 of the episodes, and it was a lot of fun. I love talking about DC, and Drew and Cletus know their stuff, so that's it. They're good. They're going to be fun to listen to.
So, first 3 episodes are up right now. The first one was a review of Batman versus Superman with Mike Horton. Second one, we talked DC television. So, right around when the Supergirl, Flash, Arrow, all those were ending, we talked about those. And then episode 3, we talked about DC Universe, and the ones after that, we've been talking about all the different Rebirth titles that have been going on, reviewing like Superman number 1, Action Comics number 1, Detective Comics. We've been reviewing all of them, so it's if you like reading comics, it's good. Come check us out.
Wow, now that now we'll have to record Batman v Superman Ultimate Edition podcast.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that the other day. Because I'm actually curious how the uncut version, or them putting in the
it's a director's cut with 30
the director's cut. I'm wondering how different the movie's going to be, because I haven't watched it since I saw it in the theater.
Hey, Drew, I actually saw a preview of that, and I could tell you how. They have Deadpool in it.
Well, see, but it could also go the other way. That 30 extra minutes could make it better. Mm-hmm. That 30 extra minutes could also make it worse.
That's true.
So.
That's true.
Well, cool. Congratulations. It's been, I'm glad that the ESO network now has is represented. The DCU is represented because, Jen's doing such a great job with the MCU. I thought, it was about time that someone took the reins of DC Comics point of view, and good for you for doing it, sir.
Yep, exactly. We're very happy to have you on. And it's kind of funny because it started out as an April Fool's joke last year that we put it up there.
How many shows on this network started out that way, though?
About 50% of those, yes.
Yeah.
They're all my brainchild, and I get then sucker people into hosting them. It's awesome.
How many podcasts in general start off as jokes or dares?
Exactly.
Mike Faber is just the puppet master, and we're just dancing at the end of his string.
Dance, puppet, dance.
Not unlike Samaritan.
Hey, I am the Samaritan of the ESO network. And that... What would that make you, Mike?
Bear.
I'll take it.
Okay. Anything you want to shout out about Mr. Mike?
Yes, I do. Speaking of podcasts, it's not on our network, but I do need to congratulate and give a shout out to Comic News Insider, which just recorded episode 700.
What?
Yes.
Woo-hoo! Holy cow. Yeah.
Jimmy Aquino is the main man responsible for that. And one of his guests on that episode, and this is how it ties in with this episode, is Michael Emerson.
Wow.
So he'll be talking to him a little bit, I'm sure, about the end of Person of Interest and whatnot. And Jimmy does a great job reviewing comics and having a lot of fun. Very entertaining fellow. If you have never listened to the Comic News Insider, I definitely recommend it. It's been around for a while. Jimmy knows what he's talking about. And if you ever see him at conventions, say howdy to him, because he's a really friendly guy. I mean, you can't miss him. He's always the guy in the suit.
Oh, no, not the man in the suit.
Well, he doesn't wear the full suit. He wears the vest and tie. He's always one of the best dressed guys at the con.
Oh, phew. I thought it was the man in the suit who carried the gun. Okay.
No, different kind of suit.
Oh, okay. Phew. All right. I got to give a shout out real quick to the TV show The Flash. They just revealed, as of today of this taping, the new costume for Kid Flash. Because Wally kind of got powers at the end of last season, and they never revealed how he was going to take it. And today they revealed that he is going to be Kid Flash this next season, and the costume looks awesome.
We'll definitely be reviewing it on DC Earth Station DCU.
Okay, let's do that again so you know what the name of the podcast is.
Station DCU.
There you go. But it's going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to, and they've pretty much announced the reason Supergirl is going to be now in the new universe is because of the whole Flashpoint thing.
They have not announced that. The thing that you posted the other day was pure speculation. There's been no announcement.
I'm going to speculate that it's true. So there we go.
I have to agree with Mike. It's still a rumor.
I can't see how, you know, they can't say it's, you know, they can't.
Well, but they can. I mean, they did film that episode of Flash with that ending long before CBS decided they weren't going to renew Supergirl.
No, but the thing is the way they the reason my thinking is with it, and we're going to DC Comic Talk for a second, hold on, folks. The reason my thinking is, you know, they are changing filming location, and there's no way Vancouver will look like Los Angeles.
Right.
Which, you know, they used plenty of for, as it was a national city, I think they called it in Supergirl. Yep. And there's no way that they can get Vancouver to mimic Los Angeles. So. That's my only reason.
They're not going to change.
Okay, well, it'll be interesting to see, and we'll keep our eyes open.
There's going to be a crossover between all four shows, so we do know that's coming. So
exactly
how they pull that off, it will be cool to see.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know what? Even though I said they haven't confirmed it yet, I'm pretty sure that they're using Flashpoint to bring in Supergirl in. We actually talked about, I think.
I was actually going to say, if we only had a podcast that could talk about that.
We already did talk about this on episode 3 with me, Mike, and Cletus.
There you go. Well, so, Drew, where can they find this fine podcast of yours?
They can find it on – it's up on iTunes now. It's at www.earthstationdcu.com. And it's also at earthstationdcu.libsyn.com, I believe.
Okay. We will have links to it in the show.
Yeah,
since
the host is having trouble with it. Yeah, it'll be up on esopodcast.com as the newer episodes come out and such, too. So thank you very much, guys. Of course, the show is brought to you by the esoamazon.com store, where you can find all kinds of great person of interest stuff, including the new season 5, which will be available right after this episode goes live. So check it out and help support the station. We will see you again next week when we go back to the movies, and we are going to go see the new Ghostbusters movie. So it should be interesting. Did we love it? Did we hate it? You'll find out next week. Oh, that's going to be interesting. Until then, my name is Mike Faber, and of course, it's been my pleasure. We'll talk to you soon. Peace. And we're done.
Woo-hoo! You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESOAmazon.com e-store, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is ESOPodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
That's it. The show's over. It's time to head home. See you next week here at Station 1.
Bye bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye bye.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.